Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Welcome, everybody, to No Spin Rodeo. We have made it to episode 20. We're told that we'll find out if we're good enough by 50. So we're five away from the halfway point. I want to start off by saying thank you to everybody that tunes in, subscribes, and listens to No Spin Rodeo. We are news-based. We are rodeo-based. And I want to welcome my counterparts today. I like to consider us kind of sports radio of rodeo. We've got Greg Teagarden, Vice President of Production for Perona Productions, who's also the producer of this show. Good late afternoon, Greg. And, of course, the First Lady of Pro Rodeo Journalism, your friend and ours, the person who delivers Facebook magic with stories and insights. Hello, Kendra. How is it on the West Coast?
Hello. It's beautiful the last couple days, and they say rain's coming tomorrow.
Well, we've got 70-degree weather in Texas. Greg, what's it in Florida?
It's actually 70, but it got down like mid-40s last night, so had to open the windows.
The flies had to put their hoodies on, right?
Yeah. The iguana, it's almost to the point where the iguanas start falling out of the trees.
Is that a thing?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yes.
So you'll just be walking and this lizard falls out of a tree because he's frozen.
Pretty much.
That's like an open bar somewhere where guys are just falling off the bar stools, right?
Exactly. You're drinking too much.
Had enough. I'm going to fall over now. Kendra, are there any iguanas? Are there even iguanas in California? There should be. It's tropical.
I haven't seen one lately, but I do remember being a kid. My dad's a veterinarian, and I do remember being at the clinic with him one time, and someone brought in an iguana, and he just kind of looked at me like, here we go. So
here we'll do a rectal temperature check on an iguana if you can find that spot. But that's good. Cold-blooded animals do freeze up. So we want to start our episodes with a little bit of coffee time. Let's go around the room. The big news for me, and I'll just pitch it out there, is I'm a football fan. You guys all know that. You've heard me try to compare football to rodeo, even when I say Super Bowl rodeo. By the way, you said you wrote that, Kendra. I saw that. You did do that. Here's the deal. So if you watch football, Kendra, I'm not so sure that you do. I think Greg does, but we have our own little pools and stuff. And this was a heartbreak. Like, it was really bad. So Boyd Pohamas is a Green Bay Packers fan. And Boyd and I spend a month together in bliss at Denver in our interesting relationship we have. And he's a Packers fan, and I'm a Cowboys fan. And during the rodeo, they're playing. And the Packers beat the Cowboys, which actually doesn't surprise me at all, because the Cowboys are really great at killing your hopes. But probably a bigger downer for me was these Detroit Lions, right? We went to Detroit with IndyCar. And Detroit, have you been to Detroit, Kendra? Have you been to the city? Isn't it, they embrace like this us against the world mentality. Like, it's just, and so this football team with this really cool big stud coach looks like the underdog that's gonna, and they're winning by three touchdowns against the juggernaut, and they lose. Do you watch football, Kendra? What's your football thing?
Well, I'm a 49er faithful. So here's the deal. But I grew up in proximity. I grew up going to Stanford back when it was the Stanford Indians, college football, basketball, all that games. And there's this, you know, the San Francisco Giants. I grew up going to Candlestick Park Beck, I mean, Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, you know, Barry Bonds' dad. I remember going to bat day for Bobby Bonds. I got a Bobby Bonds bat, whatever. Okay, so, and so then you have people like Joe Montana for a while. Guess what? One year when I was a teenager, my summer job was to put in Joe Montana's landscaping at his new house. Because he's from the area where I grew up. I grew up in Portola Valley up there, and some dear friends, the jumping farm right there, that's where Joe Montana kept his horses. Anyway, friend of a friend, so I had to follow with no background in landscaping. I had to take architecture plans and put in Joe Montana's yard one summer when I was in my teens. And I remember driving like across the Dumbarton Bridge, a U-Haul full of his plants and things like that. But anyway, and then I didn't see him again until I was with Trevor Brazil at the NFR, and they took pictures of Trevor Brazil throwing a football with Joe Montana. So,
Joe Montana come out in his flip-flops and his sweats and look at the lilies? I mean, tell us a little, what do you remember about planting?
I just remember, I mean, even then, I kind of knew, like, this is really interesting. Why would a 16-year-old or whatever, 17, whatever I was, girl, be trying to follow these? But anyway, I did it dutifully. I think it was the summer after I painted someone's house. I'd never painted a house before. I did that one summer too. But anyway, fast forward to now, the man in my life, Oat, is a Chiefs diehard and a Cowboys, of course, hater. So now, again, for the second time in recent years, my Niners against Oat's Chiefs, and my dad and Oat have a bottle of Pendleton whiskey on and get, that's what they do. So it's kind of a grudge deal now.
Well, so I'm going to test your football knowledge.
Oh, don't.
What's your take on Brock Purdy? I mean, is he the real deal? Do you even know what position he plays?
Are you serious? Are we going to get this? No, I'm the girl that was watching a rodeo. I recorded the game. And I'd like fast forward. And Oak calls me. He's like, did you see that? I'm like, no, I'm watching a rodeo. And so then he kind of blew the surprise for me. So I watched probably 8 total minutes of that last game because I had 2 rodeos recorded. And so there you have it. My priorities. Don't get deep into all the blah, blah, blah.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Everybody was surprised there was this love thing about, right, the Lions had never been to the Super Bowl, and everybody was shocked that, okay, they didn't go for it or whatever, like, or should they have kicked a field goal and all this kind of stuff. I don't know. I mean, and then, by the way, did you see all the social media banter? Is NFL football rigged? I saw a lot of that. They're like, there's no way this happens. They're like, Vegas controls football. Anyway, I'm like, Vegas control, you know.
Yeah, but there was stuff going around that said, because social, you don't know what you can believe. When you just don't know what's real right. anymore, especially with AI. But it was like, oh, they've got purple and red in the logo. They already know that Baltimore is going to be there. And, you know, when you see these guys flying through the air and catching a ball, I just don't believe that there's any way that that's rigged. However, so just so you know, the 49ers, to give them some due, you should know this. They have a white boy, a really great named Christian McCaffrey, that, you know, for a Caucasian male in a African-American dominated sport is a stud, just so you know. So you need to know that name if you live out there. McCaffrey's the real deal. Brock Purdy's their quarterback. Nobody really knows if he's great or everybody's around him great. And then you got you, Greg, with the Miami Dolphins, right? Like, I mean, they're going to be a real team. They haven't been a real team in how long?
Like, yeah, they always start off strong and then just at the end of the year just kind of give it up. I don't know how that happens.
You're saying that to a Cowboys fan? Oh, I feel real sorry for you. Your team gives it up. Okay, well, enough football. But so we've got the Chiefs and San Francisco, and I'm going to – let's do this. This will kind of be fun. Let's pick who we think's going to win. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I think Mahomes is. You think that's easy? San Francisco's great.
I know, but Mahomes seems to be able to pull anything when he's down.
And by the way, my whole family of 49er faithfuls, they also they're pulling for the 49ers, but they also think that Mahomes will probably kick our ass. So,
well, you know what I found interesting, and then we'll get off of coffee time, but I thought this was extremely interesting, and maybe Cowboys should do it. So Mahomes has a trainer, Kendra, that he goes to several times a week that's not in the football complex. It's his own person who works with him on how to contort his body and how to relax when he needs to relax when he's getting hit so he doesn't get injured. And in that game, he got hit low, right, by the knees. And if your feet are on the ground, it's probably going to literally blow a knee out. And Mahomes jumps in the air. So I just think this is phenomenal. And contorts his body so he doesn't get injured. And it's directly tied back to this trainer that has taught his body, right, taught him flexible moves so he doesn't get injured. And I think that is incredibly interesting. And that would be really great for a bareback rider if he got hung up. Or I'm being serious, that to learn how to move your body and not tense up so that you don't have a catastrophic injury. So,
well, haven't you heard the deal? Like, I remember years ago hearing things like, you know, sometimes a drunk driver will get out of a really bad wreck with fewer injuries than someone who tenses up because they're drunk and they're relaxed, and they sometimes, which is ironic, but I've heard and seen and read that for years, right? Learning how to relax.
Yeah, when I was clowning, I actually was relieved when a bull rider got knocked out. Right? It looked terrible for the crowd, but when they were knocked out, it was more likely than not always, that the injuries were less because they were out. So good point. Well, good coffee time. So Greg, you have Kansas City. Is that what you're saying?
I've got Kansas City. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Kansas City.
And Kendra, you're sticking with the Niners, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll see how it goes. All right, Kendra, lay some rodeo news. It's been a while. Lay some rodeo news on us.
Oh, there's so much all the time, which is great. But I think, did we not talk about Austin Broderson at Denver getting hurt so badly last episode? So miraculously, I mean, broken neck, was it pelvis or hip? Like, he had so many injuries. They drove back home to Canada by way of Casper, where he was going to college. And he's already back home, which is incredible. And it will be a very, very long haul. But on the news of bareback riders, it's been rough. We turned right around, and Kyle Charlie, a Navajo bareback rider, turquoise circuit stud, and he's also a firefighter, got hung up like Austin did, only at Fort Worth, and hurt really, really badly. Also miraculously, he's already back home in Arizona, but part of the scare with Austin also was that he severed an artery, and he couldn't, last I heard, he couldn't feel his left arm. Well, Kyle Charlie, the injury was so bad on his riding hand from this hang up that Tandy Freeman said, it, like, job one was to try to save that hand. So without the gory details, like, I think held to his body by the skin was pretty close to my understanding of this injury. So he is back home in Arizona. That's fantastic. It is going to be a very, very long haul. And he plans to, my understanding, commute from Arizona to Dallas to continue, you know, treatment and rehabilitation. So
on Austin, our rodeo Utah Days of 47, right after we had reached out to our board, and they were going to make arrangements to fly Austin back to Canada because a lot of things were going into this. all of his health care is taken care of with his taxes that he pays in Canada. So he needed to get home as soon as he could, because that's part of being a Canadian, is that he would get those surgeries and not accrue the debt down here. So we reached out to Austin's father, and I think you maybe have talked to him, and I just talked to him Monday, and I'm like, hey, I am catching up to see if, you know, do you need us to fly him home? And he told me the same thing. He said, no, he's released tomorrow, going to drive through the dorm, pick up his stuff, go home. And I said, well, what's the kind of the update on the injury, which you kind of went through. But what was interesting to me is that my guys on the ground in Denver, there was, with Austin, there was blood everywhere. But I didn't realize that when, same thing, he had stretched his arm so much that it pulled the artery in two in his arm and stretched all those nerves multiple inches. Again, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not speaking medical, but they won't know until they get home. You know, for one, nerves are a weird thing. I think you know this, Kendra. You know, nerves do their own thing. Sometimes they miraculously come back. Sometimes they refuse to come back. So I think it's probably a waiting game on Austin. I heard the same thing about the Fort Worth situation. Listen, I prayed in that announcer stand at Denver because I really did not think Austin would leave that arena alive. And I said that on the other podcast. I was shaken and have seen a million wrecks like all of us have. And so the fact, like, Austin and his dad and I were talking, and I said, isn't it a blessing, right? What could have happened, and the fact that he's going home. So there is some rays of sunshine for both of these guys in that life goes on relatively normal. They may or may not ever ride a bareback horse again, but compared to what could happen, what could have been the end result, I think it's an answer to prayer. So there you go. Sorry.
Absolutely. And I would also hope that Kyle Charlie could, you know, possibly go back to fighting fires. You know, I don't know. And also, I don't know, you know, yet what his healthcare situation might look like. I'm not sure how that works. I have so many friends who are Indians who, in their particular cases, have their healthcare, like Austin's, is taken care of. So I don't know where that stands, but I know that Austin and Kyle Charlie both have GoFundMes. In Kyle's case, he said it's for travel expenses to get back and forth to Texas. I did a lot of rodeo people are kind of head shy about GoFundMe because GoFundMe takes a percentage. So I did put safe mailing addresses if people would rather mail a check or a card if they care to do that. And on the subject of injuries, our newly crowned world champion Kai Hamilton, which we saw what he did about gutting it out at the finals with a, you know, after getting KO'd in the arena, he dislocated at Denver his riding arm, which is his right arm shoulder. And that was the first time. And I know from having a brother who dislocated, I know from my own dislocating my knee, like the first time is always the worst. And getting him back in quickly is really important. He also then turned right around and got kicked in his right knee at Fort Worth at the Extreme Bowls. Tandy Freeman says that Kai's, that knee of his right knee was already, quote, ACL deficient. And this time he's, you know, sprained it and has a, you know, his MCL is a little bit compromised from this getting kicked in Fort Worth. So, you know, what's the play here? It's the old, is it a matter? I'm sure he is on speed dial with Tandy about whether this is a matter of playing with pain or compromising, you know, being smart. So
I don't know how you do that, right? I mean, it sounds like it dislocated again. What I understood, I could be wrong, is that he's going to go get it fixed. But you know what I thought was interesting on that, Kendra? It's a shame that the world champ got hurt. But there were two on that particular bracket. Hamilton was out, and so was Proctor. And Shane Proctor, we all know, is, you know, he's been around. And he's, I think he's fighting Father Time. And he may win or may not, but I think Shane's fighting Father Time. But both of those guys, you know, I don't know if you heard the story, but they were out, and an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old walk up and replace them in that round, on the second round of that bracket. And the 19-year-old scored a 76. I think he's going to get back into the wild card or the semis. But Wacy, and I think it's Shala, I could be wrong on the name, 18-year-old, went for 85 and a half in Kyle's place on Kyle's bull. And those were two of three to ride in that performance. And they're moving on. So that's pretty cool that these young guys walk up, get in, and have some success. Terrible for Kai. I hope he goes fixes it, because that's not something, you know, Kai's got that Australian Troy Dunn mentality of ride through. But when your shoulder pops out of socket, this isn't something that he's going to tough or mentally overcome. That's an operational, that's got to be fixed fundamentally, right?
And once it goes out the first time, it's going to be easier for it to come out again and again and again. There's no doubt about that. And I will say on Shane Proctor, he did declare riding into this year that win, lose, draw, whatever, this is his last year riding bulls. So kind of a tough start out of the blocks, I guess, for 2024. Well,
in Toughest Cowboy, when Shane was in Toughest Cowboy, I actually thought he rode Bronx better than he rode bulls. Now, the last time I saw Shane on Bronx, he definitely needs to knock some rust off. But I wouldn't count him out in the Bronc riding in the future. He can do it. But go ahead. Keep on going. Sorry.
Yeah. So it's cool. I was going to move to the other end of the arena. The 40th annual Cinch Timed Event Championship is coming February 29th to March 1st at the Lazy E Arena in Guthrie, Oklahoma. And they are, for this 40th anniversary, they are kind of going retro back to having 25. It's kind of a different format. They're originally, for some of the years in the early going before my time, they had 25 guys. In recent years, they've done 20 guys, and it's, you know, the five timed events, five rounds each, and steer wrestling, heading, heeling, tie down roping, and steer roping. So, it, you know, they call it the Iron Man, which it really is. But this year, they're going to have 25 guys, and then after the first two rounds, they're going to cut five, so it's going to be cut back to 20. So round three and four will be 20 guys, and then the top 15 to the short round. So again, it's $100,000 to the champ. That's a big deal. With the extra five guys, I think second's going to pay better, because it used to go 100 down to 25, but they haven't, you know, released what second's going to pay yet. But anyway, $100,000 check for first place. I know that's a pretty big deal. My son Taylor won that in 2020, and $103,000 was a pretty nice pop in COVID. But, you know, it always comes down to the wire, because without fail, including this year, there are guys who at the last minute have to step out, usually because they tweaked something or hurt something, getting ready for it. Years ago, I remember Caleb Schmidt talking to him, because he was in the timed event, and he wrecked his ankle wrestling steers getting ready for the timed event. So these sorts of things do happen.
Well, a quick question. So let's help our viewers, the timed event. So they have to compete in all five timed event disciplines, correct, each round. Now, is it a total of their aggregate times or average in your case? So it's lowest times on all five in each round combined, correct?
Yeah, so it's a 25 head average. And it, wow. I mean, it's a marathon. It's, you know, it's pretty crazy. And there's nobody in the world who is routinely doing five events. So it's pretty, you know, pretty wild. But you look at those banners that now hang above the Lazy E Arena and, you know, for the timed event champions, and it's really cool. I mean, Leo Camarillo won the first one, the Lion. And, you know, there's been Jimmy Cooper and Paul Tierney and Paul's kids, Jess and Paul David have won it. And, you know, last year, Cody Dozier won it. Marcus Terrio won it a couple years ago. Like it's a huge honor if you're a cowboy and you win that, because it is an absolute gut-wrenching marathon. So,
well, question for you, do a lot of guys bring their horses there that don't compete? Because it seems to me if you were a bulldogger by trade and now you're going to steer rope, I mean, the horses in all timed events, the mount is everything. So do a lot of guys bring their horses and they're not competing and these guys get on them? Is that how they get through? I mean, besides the physical wear and tear, but is that how it works?
Absolutely. Yes. Your help is vital, and that goes for humans and horses. And, you know, again, no one is doing five events and no one has horses in five events. Virtually everyone is enlisting, you know, okay, if you're my kid, Taylor, he's got to figure out who's going to head for me, who's going to heel for me, who's going to haze for me. And, you know, when he went to his first one, he's fallen in love with steer roping. The first time he ever roped a steer was like the month before his first timed event. And, you know, somebody lends you a horse and you do it. Well, that ends up, you know, being what he loves to do. But no one's doing those five. So it's pretty, cool. It's wild. Like, you know, to get to see, you know, a world champion, you know, a Colby level, okay, 2020 world champion header. Okay, he's ranching now, and he sent his great roan horse Bartender out there with Caleb Driggers this year, which is pretty cool. But he, at 36 years old, he's like a ranch rodeo extraordinaire. He's in the timed event. You know, it's really some of the most memorable. You know, you want to watch, you get to watch Colby level bulldog. You know, I mean, it's pretty neat. Now, so
is Trevor going? Is he done?
No, I mean, Trevor's, is that an event? Trevor's done with that. And Trevor has just been dealing with a shoulder situation. And I don't know if that's supposed to be a secret, so I'll just kind of leave it at that. But no, he's the king of everything. But he's no longer, you know, if Trevor doesn't think he's going to show up and win it, he's not going to do it. And he realizes the commitment and the level of preparation and all that. He's moved on, and he's, you know, heavy into his horses now and the futurities and all that. So, yeah, no. Gotcha. And so to stick with the Lazy E, there seems to be a lot with the Lazy E here. The 47th annual BFI, which moved from its longtime home in Reno to the Lazy E for COVID reasons when Reno got shut down in 2020. That's March 30th this year. And they're going to feature a 100% payback, which is, you know, that's sort of unheard of. But BFI Week, it's cool. It's booming. There's like something for everyone. There's an all-girl team roping. There's a breakaway roping. They've added steer roping this year. I'm pretty sure, I wouldn't bet my house on it, but I'm pretty darn sure that the Lazy E was originally built, at least in part, by the Gaylord family to host the National Final Steer Roping. Do you know? I think that's right. I remember Clem McSpadden used to call it the Taj Mahal, and that's where it was for a very long time. So, my steer roping friends and son are pretty happy about that.
Well, those people, BFI, we say BFI, but, you know, it goes back to Bob Feist. And Bob Feist worked with me announcing PBRs. And so I think, you know, we hear BFI, BFI, maybe some of the younger people listening to us. Bob Feist is a legend in the sport. I would consider him the most eligible bachelor forever. So there you go.
They call him the godfather, Guido, the godfather of team roping. You know, he founded the BFI. I'll say this. I don't know if it's been released yet or not, but on March 9th, Bob Feist is being inducted into the Reno Rodeo Hall of Fame. And if I'm not at the American, I will be there for the man who he paid me the first $50 of my career. So I will call him boss until one of us dies, because Poly Royal one year, you know, we all go before the short round at Joanne Switzer's for tacos. And on her porch, I sit there and talk to Bob Feist. He's like, hey, you got to write something for the paper. And by golly, I wrote something for the paper. He paid me $50. And that, you know, that was it. I hope it was worth it. I hope he considers that $50 well spent. But before we leave the Lazy E, I would mention that having been at the Stampede at the E recently, the WCRA event, We do still have Stephanie Fryer, who's also kicking butt at Fort Worth in the early going on a different horse. Coming up in May, she will go to Corpus Christi, Rodeo Corpus Christi, on her horse Frank, and go for that Triple Crown Rodeo, which comes with $1 million. So that's
the last
down. Everybody's the last.
She's the last for the Triple Crown person, yep, that on this particular model for Triple Crown could win it.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
I hope she takes it.
And it's, I really do too. And she, you know, I didn't realize her, oh, it was reminding me, her dad was NFR steer wrestler, late NFR steer wrestler, Steve Fryer. And I did not connect those dots until Oat reminded me of that. But if, for people who remember Steve Fryer, anyway, okay, moving on, another Hall of Fame, the 2024 Bull Riding Hall of Fame. Inductions are May 18th, and the headliner has to be $7 million man, J.B. Mooney. Other bull riders getting inducted this year, J.W. Hart, Pete Gay, Ricky Bolin, who just retired from Resist All, and has been replaced by Devin Markham, who's married to my goddaughter, Shannon Jones, who is the granddaughter of John W. Jones, Sr., Hall of Fame steer wrestler, and Hall of Fame dad, John W. Jones, Jr. Anyway, I digress.
Hold on.
Sorry.
Before you do that, do me a favor. Repeat those names again.
Being inducted as bull riders this year into the Bull Riding Hall of Fame, we have J.B. Mooney, J.W. Okay. Hart, Pete, yep, Gay, yep, Ricky Bolin, Cody, yep, Lostro, Gene, oh, Lida, and Johnny Schneider. I know Johnny Schneider is an old timer. I don't know anything off the top of my head about Gene Lida. He's the only one that I'm not familiar with.
Well, the first three, this is my random thinking. So yeah, Mooney, J.W. Hart, and, yep, Pete Gay. All I'm saying is I would love to have you wonder who would win an MMA fight between those three, because those three are dirty, dirty, tough humans. And I would put my money on Pete Gay, probably because I know Pete. If I had to pick who would win the MMA fight between those three, JB, you're awful tough. J-Dub, definitely tough. Pete Gay would whip their asses. Go ahead. Keep going.
Well, and JW, like me having, you know, we go way back in the PBR, and JW, they called him the Iron Man because he set records for riding at consecutive events, which included playing with a ton of pain. There's a legends category. Chad Berger and Roy Carter are being inducted this year. Frank Newsom is going in as a bullfighter, and Dylan and HD Page's Sweet Pros Bruiser is being inducted. He was the 2016 through 18 PBR Bull of the Year. I think he died 2 years ago, but he's going to be recognized. So again, May 18th, in Fort Worth, Texas, Bull Riding Hall of Fame, class of 2024. I want to go back to Denver for a minute on a high note, because I think it's cool. So Garrett Shadbolt, the kid from Nebraska, who I first met at the Days of 47 in Salt Lake, not very many years ago, this quiet kid with a funky hat. So he kind of gets his start at places like that. Well, so he rides at the 2021 and 2022 NFR. Fast forward to him just winning his second straight Denver bareback riding title. Very cool. But for those who are like, well, what happened to him last year? Why wasn't he at the finals? He was on a tubing trip with his buddies on the Niobrara River in his native Nebraska. And he broke his leg. Like, I don't know. He like stepped off a, you know, something on the side or something of the river, stepped up, breaks his leg and has to get a plate and 8 screws. Anyway, it was a long road back for Shadbolt, but it's nice to see him back. And a second straight win at Denver is very cool. And it's good to see him back in the top five. And
he's doing good in Fort Worth. Before we leave Denver, and you know me, I'm not the timed event guy in this threesome here, but I've got to say one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time at Denver, that was Tanner and the tie down roping. So, you know, we go through a ton of runs, right? 30 something or whatever performances. But So I think he drew him. If he didn't draw him, someone else did. So forgive me for not being as eloquent as Kendra in painting this. But let me tell you, in the final round, he draws a calf that takes five steps out and takes an immediate left-hand turn on a run. Like, unbelievable. Where most guys would be pissed, give up. This guy had a plan for it. He turns the corner. He ropes him. Everybody's amazed that he gets a rope on him. He ties him and wins it. So I've just got to say shout out to Cowboy Shit there. That was – I couldn't have been more excited for a guy to win it on the worst draw in the pen. It was just flat, cold, bad. It was cool.
Am I dreaming that he had him, like, in the previous round?
I think he had that same calf. I do think he had the same calf, and he almost got it on him. But, you know, the mental preparation, this just says something about what I really respect, and that is, oh, woe me, I got the worst calf, or you approach it like he does. I'm going to win this on this animal and come up with a plan. It was just stone cold cool. It was just so cool. My favorite part.
Well, and I think it's kind of an interesting note for people who don't understand, because usually you can't draw the same animal at the same rodeo. But when we get into these different formats of tournaments and stuff, as far as the draw is concerned, it's considered like a separate rodeo, right? I remember that from the playoffs when the playoffs to the NFR were at Salinas in September that year, I guess, because of COVID. But it's good news and bad news. If you draw a shitter, you have to have him again. You know, when you're like, oh, I got past him once and now, but you might get him again. But anyway, that is interesting. And also, for those who don't already know it, Tanner Green is, of course, the grandson of the great Phil Line, who was it 1971 that he won the calf roping and the bull riding at the NFR, the same year that Ace Berry won the team roping and the bareback riding at the NFR, which is outrageous. And the fact that it happened, you know, at the same rodeo, that's just something that may never happen again. So, and both of them at two different ends of the arena, super, super cool. So, okay. So we mentioned that March 9th is the Arena Rodeo Hall of Fame inductions. It's also the 2024 American at Globe Life Field, which was home to the 2020 NFR, kind of saved the day for the NFR when Vegas shut down in 2020. So the last 3 weeks, I've been following this real closely. So the road to the American in 2024, so it started out at our South Point, our second home South Point that we love in Vegas, the West Regionals. And then it went to Oklahoma City for the Central Regionals, which was held at Jim Norick Arena, which for a lot of years was where they had the NFR. And so then this last weekend, they just finished the road to the American up in Lexington, Kentucky, the East Regional Finals. And so now the top five in each event from each of those go to the February 10th American Contender Tournament Finals in Abilene, Texas. And then, you know, when they end up getting to Globe Life, these contender types, which can be kids, which can be men in the barrel race, you know, all the stories are so cool. And then they meet up with the top five from the 2023 world standings. So, you know, the American is kind of the melting pot of rodeo. And they did just announce the music last year. I just wrote a story for the AQHA about Cody Johnson, who was the star at the American last year. And that guy's so freaking cool. I mean, you know, he's like a legit cowboy. But this year they did just announce that Post Malone, Luke Bryan, and Aaron Watson will be the music at the American Western Weekend this year. And I will also say, last year I didn't know what to expect for the American Performance Horseman, which is March 8th this year. That was really, really, really cool. And it's like cutting, reining. Are you giving me a funny look? I mean, it was so cool. Like, these horses are out of this world. Like, it was, and there were men, there were women, they had teams. It was super cool. And my neighbor, Morgan Cromer, is going to be cutting there this year. She's she's badass, and she helped my kids with their cutting when they were in high school rodeo. But it's Sarah Dawson won it, was the big champ last year. She's also badass, so it's really cool.
Well, a couple things on that. The American Horseman, I was working with the folks when they were originally putting that together. And the real key on that, shout out to Kaiser and Spragans, because they do a phenomenal job in getting the ground, which is very critical in all three of those disciplines, right? Of that horsemanship, getting that ground where they can compete at a high level in three different disciplines with three completely different needs for the ground. So these are things that you may not think about when you watch the horsemen, but that's pretty amazing that they were able to do it. And then the last thing, Post Malone, that's on, is that on the Saturday? Is that on the last day?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I listen to Post Malone music, but I have seen a picture and that guy's got, he's got a lot of things going on his face. Like it looks like the Tennessee Atlas. He's got lots of designs and stuff. So that's an interesting marriage between Post Malone and rodeo. And so it's good to try new things. We'll see how that works. So you've got,
yes, a lot. And I was wondering a little bit also. I said that to one of my good friends who's part of the crew. And I'm like, okay, I'm not that familiar or that I know of. And she said, you know, he's doing some country stuff. And I actually really like his music. So perhaps we should, you know, keep an open mind. I'm sure.
I've got an open mind. I think it's cool.
Talent. Yeah. Yeah.
There's room for a cowboy hat to be put on his face too. Let me think.
And I have seen a picture of him with a cowboy hat on. It might not be shaped to your liking, but I mean, I think it sounds like he's doing some crossover music and some of it's kind of cool.
Greg, are you a Post Malone guy?
I like Post Malone. We were trying to get him to Days of 47 last year as one of influencers, I guess is what they're called, what the marketing company called him.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right on. All right.
I think he lives in Utah. And,
can you sing a song? Do you know what's the song he sings, Greg?
I can't think of one right now. No, you're going to put me on the spot.
Okay. All right.
I'm sure you've heard of him. I'm sure. You're probably like, oh yeah, I like that song.
I know the name. So. I love the name. First name Post. That's cool. All right. Onward, Kendra.
Okay. So onward. So Rodeo Houston is going to have its inaugural Hall of Fame. This seems to definitely be a trend. We're seeing more and more of, you know, big rodeos having their own halls of fame. So the inaugural class of 2024 for the Rodeo Houston Hall of Fame is Bob Tallman, Charmaine James, and Mike Serby. So I another thing that I saw that's a first that I think is cool, I know that I'm not calling it a first, but I know that there were some rodeos that if you won the rodeo, you got to compete at Fort Worth. So this year, for the first time, the PRCA Permit Challenge winners from Vegas in December get to enter Houston. That's pretty cool. That's never happened before. So that's cool. And I, you know, a long time ago on this, we were talking about charities and different things. And I did just see a stat that's sort of staggering. Houston being a nonprofit, they've given over $600 million to Texas youth since they started in 1932. And 22 million has already been committed for education, grants, and scholarships this year in 2024. The economic impact to the area, to the Houston area, $391 million from the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. I think that's incredible. Anyway, Houston's coming up February 27th to March 17th. It's amazing how long some of these rodeos go. I feel like, yeah. Doesn't Fort Worth go all the way to the February 3rd or something? It's
the National Western went from the 2nd to the 21st. It's a long run. And you know what? It's good about it is that a lot, I noticed at the National Western, a lot of people get their shot, right? And if they take advantage of it, it can be their kickstart. And I'm glad to see Houston's, you know, putting the young blood in there. That's what this sport needs. We need to give opportunities to people that need it. So there you have it.
So before the last thing that I was going to talk about is the retirement of a great horse. Greg, did you want to interject with a little feedback before we, because I don't see us shutting down on the next thing we talk about very easily. Well,
before we start that, I just got some quick off the wall news that I think is cool. They at Red Bluff, they've got a bull sale and stuff. I read that they do a stock dog show in Red Bluff. I don't know if you've ever been to it, Kendra. The number one stock dog named Louie brought $50,000. That to me is.
Did I hear correctly who bought him?
Well, I only know who bought second place. I don't know who bought the $50,000 dog. Now, the second place dog brought $21,000 and Legacy Pro Rodeo bought that dog. But do you know who bought the $50,000 dog?
Well, then maybe I, whoever told me about it on Sunday was. Had their wires crossed because I thought that they said Grownie on behalf of Legacy Pro Rodeo bought the high dog, but maybe they were wrong. Maybe it was the second one.
I think they bought the second one. Now, I could have my facts wrong because this is kind of flying over. But $50,000 for a dog is cool. Stock dogs for these guys is cool. So, again, I thought that was interesting, right? You don't think that a stock dog could bring that kind of money, and that's really cool. So I'm sorry, Greg, what do you got for feedback?
Well, I guess we could finish up the National Western because we got some feedback about that. They said, I really liked your podcast. It's the only one that delivers inside information. And then they said, Tommy Joe, I feel compelled to share my feelings about the National Western. It's my least favorite rodeo of the year. My favorite event is Saddle Bronc. The varying of horses, even in the championship round, was amazing. The stock in normal rounds was an embarrassment to the National Western and the Servies, and it happens year after year. It is disrespectful to the top hands. I grant you it works for the beginners. It amazes me how you guys get the top guys to show up. I didn't notice several top cowboys that didn't show up. Good for them.
Well, I'll take the first run at this. I don't disagree with that feedback, but I think there's several things going on. There were some big names that didn't show up at the National Western, and there could be a variety of reasons why that. Stock could be one of them. Here's the thing that we, if you're doing insider kind of behind the plate stuff, you've got this now tournament rodeo, which I think is fantastic for fans, where they're bracketed, you move on, you move on, you move on. So that's really cool, but they haven't really changed the backside. So in a lot of these rodeos, you have a primary stock contractor. It happens to be Binion. I like Binion. And so here's how it works. Binion gets hired by the National Western and paid to bring all the stock. Okay? So let's look at the financial implications of this. The least amount of stock that Binion has to lease, the more that Circle I will make. That's just economics. And so what you notice is that Binion has got, the Servies have got some talented top-end horses. The Volds had talented horses there. I will say hats off to Bailey Pro Rodeo, had some phenomenal barebacks and really good broncs. But the shining one for me was, to talk about Grownie, is Legacy, who bought Bartee. There were some Bartee, old Bartee horses. Legacy's horses there were phenomenal. But back to my initial point. So if you're the primary stock contractor, the more of your horses that you can use and bulls, right, in this situation, that is out money. So these people get paid basically. You can divide it by the animals used. And, you know, at Days of 47, we pay on outs. And we have multiple stock contractors and we pick the best. Well, so, you know, if Survey bucks one of their horses and doesn't pay somebody, it makes money. And so I did notice, you know, Survey's had some Z brand horses, some younger horses in there that darn sure wanted to buck and maybe didn't know where their feet were. You know, they're figuring it out. And I will say that if you look at that in bracket style, now, I will say this. They're giving them two head, right, Kendra? So you got two chances to draw the right animal, and the aggregate moves you forward. That's good. But in this bracket-style format, if you've got seven or eight points different on a horse between the top end and the low, this is, I think, what's rubbing these fans the wrong way, is that you watch a set of eight and there's, you know, if you drew this horse and you can spur, you're probably not going to move on. And I think that has to be looked at in bracket play. Now, they do have aggregates. So, you know, he could have drew, but some of these guys drew two horses middle of the pin. And when you're in the bareback riding and in the bronc riding, when these guys can spur like they ride like they ride and they're that deep in cowboys, you will notice more than not that this guy didn't, if he had had the right horse, he would have moved on. And remember, it's luck of the draw in this sport. It always has been. It will be forever. It is at the NFR. If you, not just if you don't get the one that you won't want, but if you get one that doesn't fit you. So it isn't all on Circle I. I think that the system has to be looked at a little bit. If you're going to play bracket play, I think you really have to ensure that it's not so much of a drawing contest. And I think that's what's rubbing these fans the wrong way. I don't disagree. There were horses in the pins that you couldn't win on. If you were a top guy and you drew that horse, you weren't going to outmark the other guy that can spur just as good as you that's on a 23, right, point horse. And so that's definitely true. And I think it's probably reflected in some of the guys are choosing not to come, because they don't want to be involved in a drawing contest. So, Kendra, I don't know if you have any input on that particular feedback.
I have a question. Did I hear correctly? Does Denver give some sort of an award for the best horses or something? Or did somebody told me this morning that we just in December we were pretty shocked that for the first time ever, Bold Rodeo Company didn't have any animals at the NFR. And then somebody told me today that Kirsten Volt's horses won. What is it that they won?
Well, I don't, it's an award. And Greg, do you remember, cause you probably built the graphics. I don't know if that was is that the Chuck Sylvester award?
I don't remember if it was.
So they have an award that goes to the stock contractor, and it's usually granted before the end rounds, and Volt's won it. And I don't know. I honestly don't know, Kendra. I don't know who decides that, if that's data-driven, if that's politics. I don't know. I did see Kirsten there. Great to see her. She had some really great horses there. Again, there were two or three horses there that if you look at them, you're like, how could they not go to the NFR? But she did win. They did win. The stock contractor award, and I can't remember what it's named after, but
yeah. good for them, good for her. And it does make you kind of wonder, like, they didn't just find their groove to learn how to buck in a month from when they were not selected, right? I mean, so anyway,
no, they got the bloodlines, they bucked now. But I will say, the standout in my opinion was Legacy. They had their horses, and Bailey was a good honorable mention. And of course, Servies were great, but Servie bucks a lot of horses there. So I'm not taking anything away, honestly, because Binion, don't text me. You had great horses there, but I would say for me, if just being a viewer at that other end of the arena, I was impressed with the amount of good horses Legacy had, Legacy Pro Rodeo. So there you have it. What other feedback you got? Do we have any more, Greg?
Yeah, so we have a response to the news we broke last time about Ram Rodeo kind of pulling back a little bit in their sponsorship level. We heard from a committee person in the state of Kansas. They wanted to thank us for your content regarding Ram Rodeo. We cherish our relationship with Ram Rodeo. We were saddened to hear the news. Your podcast was timely, as we were told the day previous. Our committee has taken your advice and gotten to work filling the sponsorship hole.
Fantastic. If you sit there, we talked about football, Greg. If you sit there and watch the desk at the football, the center logo was Ram Trucks in their desk. So if you want to know where they've decided to put their money, I can bet that Ram logo in the middle of the playoff run in the middle desk might be where they redirected some money. Just saying.
Maybe I'll see a Super Bowl commercial. If you guys want to give us some feedback. You can do it, text us at 817-668-2395 or nospinfeedback@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys.
So, okay. So before we talk about something really cool that happened on Saturday night, I would like to go back to the fact that we had two horrific bareback riding wrecks. And I've got this buddy who I've never met this person, but he's an elderly old cowboy. And he seems like a really cool guy just from, you know, Facebook and social media or whatever, but he's very heated on the subject. And it's something that I promised him when time permits, I guess I will look into it. But after having Austin Broderson and Kyle Charlie's wrecks so awful in the bareback riding, this older cowboy is on fire and he's like, please, please. I've been trying. There is such a thing as a quick release Riggin or cinch on a Riggin or something. And he said, I've been fighting this fight for 50 years and they won't approve it, but it would have saved these kids and it would be better for the cowboys and better for the horses. Do you know anything about that? Because I do not.
I've heard about it and I don't know that you're going to be able to replicate. Here's the thing. You would have to implement it across the boards. Because I don't think you're going to get the same bind that they get if you watch the bind that they get. I mean, those guys are locked in. Their fingers are wrapped around, but it ain't like they're holding on. Like it used to be, it was a loose, like when my dad put me on the Shetland pony in a bareback rigging, it was a floppy handle and you hung on for dear life. And
that ain't
the way it is. Yeah, it was made out of leather, and these are leather with shanks in them, and they bind that hand in there. My point is, there's no way that something that's going to break away would have I can't imagine it having the same bind. So you would have to implement this across the boards, right? You'd have to say because I think it would be a disadvantage if you wrote in something that didn't have the bind that those did. And so it may be like they talk about the football helmets now are twice as heavy and different to stop concussions. You know, it may come to a point, right, where there's enough injuries that the league, the PRCA, steps in. But we haven't seen the PRCA historically step in and make those kind of decisions. And I don't see it coming ever. It makes sense. I get it. But that takes some moxie and implementation across the boards, and I don't see that ever happening.
Well, the other thing, I guess it seems a little bit parallel to not mandating that you wear a vest or a helmet, you know, in the bull riding or even the buck and horse events, like as far as so, and I think my understanding of that, having had a lot of conversations with people like Tandy Freeman, is that they don't do it because if they did, and then, you know, you open yourself up for litigation if, you know, some guy breaks his neck and then he says, oh, if I didn't have an extra 4 pounds on the end of my neck from this mandated helmet, you know, I wouldn't have a broken neck. And, you know, so you just, so they've gone back and said, it's you're an independent contractor. You choose what's best for your career and your safety, right? Basically.
And I agree with that. If you take this back to seatbelts, I am not anti-seatbelt. I wear a seatbelt. If I don't have my seatbelt on, I feel. But I remember when the seatbelt law came in, and it still harkens back to you should implement laws that affect others' safety, I think, not yours. If you don't want to wear a seatbelt, you're not going to hurt somebody. You're going to hurt yourself. And so why would the federal law be to put a seatbelt on? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because insurance companies figured out they could pay a lot less money because there was a lot less injuries, and they had lobbyists that got seatbelt law. That's the reason the seatbelt law is in, because the truth is if you don't want to wear a seatbelt and drive, you're probably only hurting yourself. And it's the same thing if you decide to nod your head in bull riding and don't wear a helmet. You know, you're not going to hurt. Well, you could hurt a bullfighter, but, you know, so I don't think this stuff's ever going to happen. And I don't think I don't think it actually makes sense. People should do, you know, they're not, it's not hurting someone else. Does that make sense, Kendra? If you don't want to have a breakaway latch on your bareback rig or wear a helmet, you're not damning, you're not going to hurt someone else that doesn't have a choice. You're hurting yourself for a choice. If you know, potentially hurting yourself for a choice. I don't see it happening. I can see the litigation part of it, but they did it in football. You know, they basically said, look, the NFL said, look, we pay you millions of dollars and you're going to play and you're going to hit each other hard and see the CT stuff is real. It's hurting people and you're going to do it. And we know you're going to do it. So we're going to tell you, you can't, if you want to play in the NFL, that takes moxie. And by the way, a lot of money. They're not going to go. Where are they going to go now, to the spring league and play because they don't want to wear their helmet? No, they're not, right? Because they're leaving millions of dollars on the table. And that's not the way it is in our sport. It's well, just not.
What, yeah. Work. And what on in similar lines, what came to the forefront, like at least in my conversations with Cowboys and stuff at the NFR, was J.B. Mooney. Well, you know, some people started ripping when Kai Hamilton got knocked out. Some people started ripping J.B. Mooney for that he had, you know, been a bad influence on Kai, and then Kai wasn't wearing a helmet. Da da da. But it's not part of the tough guy shtick. It was J.B. You know, they're both a little bit taller, and Kai was struggling when he was wearing a helmet, and what he realized was, he was more likely to get, at least he felt, he wasn't riding very well, and he felt like he was being hindered, which was also in his judgment for his own self, compromising his own safety. So it, you know, this well, conversation.
ADAX, Donnie Gay will tell you, go up and ask him. He'll say he thinks that the helmet gets more people jerked down because of the weight. He doesn't think he could have rolled with a helmet because of the weight. And that's a, you know, you put pounds on your head when it's all about, right? It's all about sitting up, right? It's keeping in the bull riding. And I get that. However, when you see a guy get jerked down that doesn't have a helmet on, we all wish that they did that, because they're better off coming into contact with that bull with some kind of protection on. Now, I'm not saying that I endorse it. It's both ways. But I, as a viewer or as someone that doesn't want to see someone get hurt, I definitely, especially kids, right? Young guys, kids that are just learning, they should have helmets on.
Yes. And the one example that I can remember, and I'm sure helmets have come a million miles, but do you remember when Scott Breden got jerked down on Bodacious and that helmet got driven into his face? It was insane. Yep. And he broke a lot of his face, you know, but anyway, we're not here to solve
the
that.
Vest, the vest, I don't understand the vest, right? Time and time again, you see guys, and I'm not saying vest will save you. We both know people that have been seriously injured with vests, but it doesn't hurt. And because I've heard, well, I can't move with the vest on. I can see vests. It's a harder argument for me on the vests than it is a helmet, right? Because I would think you could figure out a way to ride with a vest on. But all I've got to say is, look, these kids should be riding, right? When you're learning, come on. That is a no-go for me.
Hey, you're talking to a mom whose little boys rode with helmets when they were little kids, because I was like, you know, one of them hit the dirt, and I'm like, I just need to protect his brain, you know.
Yeah,
one time. Exactly. They totally. Only hit the dirt one time, but I was like, you know, people can laugh or whatever they want to do. But anyway, okay, so let's talk about Saturday night in Fort Worth. It was really a special Rafter G Rodeo retired 105 assault. Their Buckskin Pride and Joy, you know, the late, great Neil, Hall of Famer Neil Gay's last favorite horse. So it was really cool. And what a job they did with it. That horse had bucked at Fort Worth 19 straight years. I think they said 17 in the finals. That horse, I mean, including his last out was this year, a week, January 20th. It was a week before the Saturday night was the 27th when they retired him. But the reigning college champ, Q McCorder from Cal Poly, had him and was 84 points on him in the Bronc riding. But like, really cool that like Casey Field has won him, won Fort Worth on him in the bareback riding, has won a round on him at the NFR. But that's the horse that Richmond Champion became the first ever overnight Cowboy Millionaire we've ever seen, when 10 years ago when he won the American on Assault. And like, Richmond was like 105 Assault, the horse that changed my life. You know, that's really cool. And what I thought was so neat is that horse looks like $1 million. He's 23. There's no telling how much gas he's got left in the tank. But I thought it was so cool. The coolest moment for me was when, before they opened that gate, that horse walks over to Jim Gay and they just look each other. I mean, eye to eye. It was really like, it was a tearjerker, but it was so cool. And that horse is like, he loved it. I mean, all the great ones, love it. I remember talking to Charmaine James years ago, you know, about Scamper. And, you know, the great ones, you can't be great if you don't love it. I don't care if you're a football player or a bucking horse or a barrel horse or whatever you are. Assault loved the game. And now I just think it's so cool of the Gay family to turn that horse out at the Rafter G when there's no telling. He might have another 3 to 5 years, you know, but the his people made the call and said, you're going out on top. You're a king. And I thought that was cool.
Well, I was watching it and they cut away to Jim. And if you know Jim, I grew up with Jim at Mesquite. He was 3 or 4 years older than me, and we ran together and played together. And Jim, if you think Neil is stoic, Jim is, I mean, like borderline marble. Like, he's just like, you don't, I've known Jim my whole life, and I don't know whether he's going to punch me or shake my hand. You can't tell. And you could see, like, I was sitting there going, come on, Jim, go ahead. Let one roll out of those eye ducts. It's worth it. And you could just see the emotion in him, more specifically when he tipped his hat, right, to that horse. You know that that was, and his mom's there and dad's up there watching. And I agree with you. I think it's the right, you know, going out on top is honorable. And when the stock contractor decides that for them, and what a fantastic horse. I mean, that horse, everybody that's been around rodeo knows. And you're right. He looks fantastic and had fantastic trips. So hats off to Jim and the family. And, you know, Jim, it's okay to show a little emotion, you rugged old jerk. But yeah, it was super cool. Proud of that family. Always have loved the, you know, the Rafter G and the Gay family stands for something kind of like we do. And they're a cool family, cool people. And, that was a cool moment.
I don't know, Pete, I just had a flashback. I don't know Pete as well as I know Donnie, but, about 5 years ago, I get wheeled into this little room for Dr. Kadambe, awaiting him to do a knee replacement on me. And they wheel me in right next to me in my little hospital gown and my little hospital hat. And they wheel me right in there to wait right next to Jim Gay, who right after I got my new knee, they wheeled me back into the recovery room and wheeled Jim in for his new hip. So anyway, that's my Jim Gay moment. We to meet up in hospital gowns, but I just thought that that was a classy, really cool, you know, I mean, if it was all about money, I mean, that horse might be at the NFR again. He was at the NFR. He still had his NFR sticker on his butt, right? Like on his hip.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He just came from the NFR, you know, this is, and I think, you know, whether we're talking about horses or bulls or humans, like Caleb Schmidt is not out there full time. I'm sure we'll see him at the winter rodeos, but like Jade Corkill is not out there right now. Like whether or not, you know, Jade comes back or not, I don't know yet or whatever, but like Caleb Schmidt, what's he got left? How many gold buckles could he, you know, go on to win? But I think the going out on top thing, there's a lot to be said. And, you know, I remember Ty Murray doing it, and I remember like he was so sure about his decision, and I thought that was so cool. And I remember, you know, Jim Sharp trying to come back when he was past his prime and, you know, kind of wishing he hadn't really. The going out on top thing, it's hard to know where that line is, but if you can gauge it right, it's really a cool thing.
Well, I think it has a lot to do in modern era with opportunities. You know, as we've spoke in the past, these guys have made decisions that have given them options in life to end on top. I mean, if you look at Troy Aikman versus Tom Brady, Troy Aikman went out on top. He's super cool. Tom Brady can't stop. Neither could Aaron Rodgers. Or not Aaron Rodgers. What's the Green Bay guy? Who am I talking about, Greg? Not Aaron Rodgers. Before Aaron.
Brett Favre.
But Brett Favre. Those guys in football, right? They kept playing. And, you know, I agree with you. No one win. And having the opportunity. And I think that has to do with your identity, who you, you know, are you okay with not being there? And are you okay with being a father? You look at Casey, you know, he made a significant choice to be a father and to start businesses. He quit. I put Casey out against anybody today, and that takes moxie. I said moxie a couple of times.
Yes.
That takes moxie. It takes self-endurance and pride. And I agree with you.
It's like
going out on top is a big thing.
The priority. And, you know, Trevor Brazil did it too. And, you know, I remember my son Taylor and I went for coffee at Starbucks after they tied the calves at Rancho Mission Viejo, San Juan Capistrano Rodeo. It was in August before Trevor walked away. And we're drinking coffee here for a minute. And he said he was miserable because it was his kid's first day of school and he wasn't there. And he's like, this will not happen again. And it's like, what was most important to him? Trustin, Style, and Swayze. Or no gold buckle compares. Same with Casey. Casey maybe could have, you know, 8 or 10 gold buckles, but his kids would probably be grown and they're not willing to sacrifice that. And I, man, what respect I have for that decision.
And you look what Sage is doing, right? I mean, you look at what Sage is doing. He's, you know, he's not ready to be done, but the PBR gives him structure to where he can arrange things. You know, I walked away from the PBR when it was hot as firecracker because I wanted to coach baseball with my kids. And it's just a personal decision that you have to make. And, you know who it's the hardest on, though? All of us that love to watch them. You know, I remember when Trev, I went to the party and I just sat there and thought, it's hard to see the end of an era when you're a fan. Right. It's we're the ones that are like, oh, come on, just Casey, give me one more year of you in the 10th round raking though, you know, and so it's the hardest on us, but shout out to them. I'm with you. It's the right way to do it. I mean, there's a bunch of clowns that should probably hang it up.
Well, and the thing about it is when it's all said and done, you know, I always tell my boys, like, live your life on the no regrets tour. Like, no one has ever regretted spending more time with their kids. Never. And so, I mean, people just know when it's right. And that's not to say if, you know, it's a personal decision for everybody. But By the way, you were at Trevor's going away party. I foundered on the cookies at that. That was at the South Point. Is that what you're talking
about? Yes, it was. There was that table by the curtain. Yeah, that was diabetes on a table. Like, I think I had a half a cookie. Yeah, and again, it was real surreal, right? Those kind of things are surreal. That you were there and now you're here and you're watching it and you're included in it. And that's what we're blessed. We both say it all the time. We have amazing relationships in this business that allow us to travel these emotional highways with the people that actually have the ability to do it. Right.
I will never, ever in my lifetime forget being the passenger in the car driving with Trevor to the Thomas and Mac on the last day. And it's like, we're just talking. And I'm like, how is this me? How is it me that when Ty beats Mayhem's record and I'm in there like a media and they're tapping away in the press room and I hear this clink, 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 and he's running back in to get me like, no, you're out of here and we're going to go hit the town. And it's like, man, this is like the greatest. Yeah. It's the greatest. Yeah. We're so lucky.
We're so blessed. Well, I think that probably wraps it up for episode 20. We want to thank all of you very much for joining us. Please let us know your thoughts. Keep us tuned up. Send in the hard stuff. We're not scared of it. She's not scared of it. I'm not scared of it. You got something you want to say? Bring it on. I will end it with, I'm pretty sure if Pete Gay wanted to, he would have broke Donnie's record. Pete's the real deal, by the way. And I don't know if Donnie would agree with me, but Pete, you talked about Pete not knowing him. I was around Pete. He's the real deal cowboy. Still is. So anyway, thank you all for being a part of it. Any going away brilliant memes you want to verbally lay out on us? Otherwise, we'll call it a day.
No, I'm still having flashbacks of getting locked in my office yesterday, but we should – let's let that go. It's not going to happen again. Not going to happen again.
It's not going to happen again. All right, everybody. Thank you all for being a part of it. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Please listen. If you like it, tell somebody about it. Subscribe. By the way, subscribing just lets you know when we're going to put an episode out. So subscribe. Be a part of No Spin Rodeo. Be a no spinner. Stand up for what's right. Do the right thing. Retire early if it's time. For Kendra, Greg, and myself, have a blessed day, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.